Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
KGMZ-FM and HD1 and KGMZ San Francisco, 95.7 The Game. Live from the DGDG.com studios on the corner of Broadway and Battery, this is the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. Now, Damon Bruce.
Instead, how about Matt Kolsky and John Dickinson? 408 texter, crack was awesome in the 80s. Things got weird in the last 5 minutes of the 4 o'clock hour. So we're going to bring them back down to earth now that we're in the 5 o'clock hour. Things get very serious. We got a Bay Bridge series coming up. Coverage starts in just an hour. First pitch 6:35 out in Oakland as Derek Rodriguez squares off with Edwin Jackson. As I said earlier, two guys you didn't expect to be on the roster this year necessarily, and both of whom have an ERA under 3 at the moment. All that is very good. Also, before we get back into baseball, I do quickly want to get into this NFL anthem situation. And JD and I talked about this briefly before the show. We're of a very similar mind on this, that for those of you who missed the news, essentially what has happened in the last couple of days is the Miami Dolphins submitted paperwork to the NFL that included them wanting to, what's the right way to put this, impose disciplinary sanctions on players who protested during the national anthem. Although the league had sort of laid the groundwork for that, once the Dolphins submitted the paperwork, they paused the anthem policy entirely. So we essentially now have no idea what the anthem policy is going forward. And the one thing they've accomplished with this freeze is guaranteeing that the story is not over.
Yep.
All the NFL has to do here, for better or worse. Now, I personally, I got a lot of issues with the whole anthem thing to begin with. I don't totally know why the national anthem happens before sporting events. If someone could explain that to me satisfactorily, that'd be great. I always thought we were a nation that separated, official observances of the country from frivolous activities. But hey, whatever. Whatever they decide, whether it's that guys will be punished for protesting during the anthem or that guys can do whatever they want during the anthem, whatever the decision is, the sooner they make it, the sooner everybody gets over it, learns to live with it, and forgets about this story. The only way to ensure that this story continues to be an issue for the NFL is to keep doing things with it.
Yeah, and that's where I'm at with this thing as well. Look, I have zero problem with any athlete or coach or anybody that wants to protest during the national anthem. I have zero issue with it. But the thing that I think owners or those in the league that want it done away with and want the story to go away and want it to be something that isn't talked about as much in their locker room, it's a very simple fix.
Yeah.
And the fix is just allow it to happen. Because what's going to happen is if you just allow it to happen, and this is what it boggles my mind when you think of the fact that like the league and the owners and people just keep doubling down on trying to put a discipline or a negative connotation to it.
Right.
When in reality, if you just let players do what they want, it's going to become less of a story over time to the point where it really won't be talked about all that much. So if that's what you want, and again, I'm on the other side of it, but if you want it to not be a story, just let it go,
yep.
And it will stop being a story. But the more you meet it with resistance, the more you're going to have players saying, that's BS. I personally agree with them. This thing leaks with the Dolphins. But now you're going to have, well, forget that. You're going to have people that weren't going to protest that are going to protest now.
You're making it worse.
It is going to be something that will be a question asked of every single coach, you know, player open locker room setting of every training camp for every single team. Every coach will get asked about it. Every big-time player will get asked about it at some point in the next week, and then all of their reactions, because the story just continues to go. And that's fine. Maybe it needs to continue. You know, I'm fine with that,
yeah,
too.
I mean, unfortunately, the story that's continuing is serving nobody, because the conversation is not about the issues that are being protested. We're not having the conversation we want. Well, we're not having the conversation Colin Kaepernick wanted us to have. That's for sure. At least not enough of it. Instead, we're having a lot of hand-wringing and a lot of loud voices who I don't think actually have a lot of weight or clout behind them. And I include the president in that. Yeah, look, if the NFL says players can do whatever they want, it's their choice how they want to observe the anthem, and if they choose that moment to make a protest, go ahead. And the president would tweet angrily about it for a week, and he'd probably never think about it again, because it would stop being on TV. You know when he tweets about things? When they're on TV. And all you, like you said, ignore it. If you just say,
if you disagree,
players do
with
what
it,
they want,
ignore it.
Yeah, players do what they want, but then as the NFL, you just say, all right, cameras, don't show the kneeling players. Literally, no one's going to be talking about it a month into the season. There will still be players kneeling and some players holding a fist in the air, and I hope they all get their message across as best they could hope to.
And for the most part, reporters are only going to report and write and speak about things that are going to draw clicks or garner interest. And if there is a month without any new angle, it will just stop getting reported for the most part. It'll stop being talked about for the most part.
That's right.
It will literally go away. Because that is exactly. And that's my point. We're saying the same thing. That's the point in this, is that we live in a society where it's, you know, people, for the most part, reporters can't waste their time on stuff like that.
That's right.
They can't waste their time on things that aren't new
for
a month.
There's a breaking story. And then there's another breaking story, and another, and another, and another. And that's what media is. Not just sports media, all media, but especially sports media. It's what's the next story? What's the next thing? And we mentioned Kaepernick when we had this conversation before the show as well. If they just found a way to get Kaepernick on a roster as a backup and to allow players to do whatever they want and just stop talking about it, then what they're going to have is a non-story a month into the year.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to care. And frankly, I just don't believe that there's some group of fans who are going to walk away from the NFL because 3% of the players are kneeling during the anthem. I don't believe that.
No. And the people that write letters to the owners and say they're done with that team and they're done, those people aren't going anywhere.
No. And frankly, they're mostly responding, again, to the news story, not the actual protest.
I mean, any owner that literally believes that the stands are going to be half full because
if they let guys kneel
is just probably shouldn't, isn't competent enough mentally to be an owner. I mean, that's
yeah, I don't understand it, but clearly,
but they can't hold their mud on that. They can't, like, they just can't do it. They can't or won't or whatever. It's a scenario where the belief is that that has to be met with some form of resistance.
The owners don't care, says a 925 texter. They just got $255 million each before tickets, food, parking. That may be true,
well,
but they certainly appear to care.
If they don't care,
then why is this happening?
Exactly. Exactly.
Like that, for some reason they care. Now, why do they care? Is it because of political relationships they have? Is it because they really believe it's wrong to kneel during the anthem? I don't know. I'm not sure why, but they're certainly behaving like people who care. We can say that, right?
Yeah.
There's an awful lot of noise around this if they're just a bunch of guys who don't care. I'm not really sure how else you can view it.
I'm with you. I mean, that's really all I have on it.
No, I know. That's sort of where we're at, I think, is we can keep litigating the same issues, or we can just
Live with it.
And clearly the deal gets leaked about the Dolphins and their proposed stuff and what they're going to do, and players could get suspended, and the league has got – I mean, if I'm in the league office, I'm just fuming. That like how did it get to that point where it's – I mean, because that to me is worse than a lot of what we'd heard to this point. I mean, really? We're 3 years into this now, and we're talking about suspensions? Like, what are we doing? Like, what are we doing? And then the president, of course, is going to tweet, right. And then it's right. going to become this thing, and everybody's going to have to talk about it, and it's a vicious cycle. It never ends.
I hope it does. And you create, JD, I wish you hadn't just said that. But you hope it does end.
Me too. But you create a divide now. You create a bigger divide. So now you're going to have more people digging in on the one side. You know what? Matt Kolsky wasn't protesting before, but Matt Kolsky's so ticked off now. Yeah.
I think we saw that last year.
Then I'm going to protest.
We saw that last year where guys who had not protested began protesting when they saw the comments that certain owners made about the protests. That actually drove some of the protests. The fact that these guys can't see this is it's pretty staggering, actually. Someone did send me an article during that. Apparently, the singing of the national anthem at sporting events began during the 1918 World Series. When the nation was at war. I understand it a little more then.
I guess that's what I would say.
To me, the national anthem seems like an unimportant tradition. And if guys want to protest during it, I say go for it.
I'm with you.
And whether you think that or not, I don't think there's any argument that what the NFL has done has done them any favors. Whether your priority is the bottom line, whether your priority is to send a particular messages, whether your priority is to be as patriotic as possible, I don't think any of those aims have been served by the way the NFL has handled this to this point. We seem to have... Is it officially breaking news if it's a rumor, Albie? How do we... what do we do here? Are you on the air?
No.
Oh, okay. So this is a
the A's,
rumor.
A's deal?
The A's.
Okay.
Reportedly in the hunt for Mets closer Yuris Familia. Where's he go? Is your sixth inning guy?
He can help a lot of teams. He'd be your seventh inning guy.
Okay.
You got him, and I mean, because you can't have Trevino pitch two innings every game.
No, that's true.
That's the one. I mean, they've done it a lot lately, and you know, especially when he's had a couple of, you know, if he has 2 days off, he basically goes two innings the next close game.
Mm-hmm.
And then Trinan goes the ninth, or they split three innings, basically. You know, Trinan might come in a little early.
Familia suspended last year for performance-enhancing drugs, right?
But he's really good.
Been really good this year.
That would be a really good move for the A's, for the Giants, for anybody. I mean, that's a guy you'd want to get.
You have it right now? We have Billy Beane specifically addressing relief pitching.
We think the reliever market may be better, and we might be getting more value. Maybe we attack this from the other side and try and shorten the game with what we have, because we think we're getting better acquisition, a better player for what we're giving up in the relief market. And there may be more options. And if you can get to August, you also have the expansion of rosters and kind of split the game up in much shorter segments, similar to what some of these teams are doing, the Tampas, and I think the Dodgers did a little bit last year. And I think to look at it in a very linear fashion and say, hey, we need a starter. This guy's available. What's it going to cost? I think you're probably going to find yourself in a competition that you don't want to overpay in. And so we're trying to take a more dynamic approach. That's the way I think we have to look at it, given the state of the starting pitching that is on the market.
Well thought out.
That is from Susan Slusser's podcast, and that certainly makes a lot of sense.
I think that's
something you were kind of saying about the Giants earlier in the show, that if you can't get a starter that really improves your rotation, maybe the better angle is shorten the game a little bit from the back end.
Yeah, and I think the A's, he applies for both teams, for the A's and the Giants locally. And the Giants, I think, last week were reportedly interested in Familia as well. He can help, and I think the A's are in a spot where, yeah, maybe you get him and you get another, you know, stopgap guy like we were talking about that can be a, you know, put him in your rotation as one of, you know, let's say three or four guys that are basically four or five types, and you try and get through the lineup a couple of times, and you get the game into the sixth inning, and all of a sudden you've got Familia, and you've got Trevino, and Trinan, and Buchter's been really good. as well from the left side. He's underrated. He's actually been really good in his career since he's come up.
Eventually, maybe you go, you know, Tampa Bay Rays style and just start the game with Trinan. Who the heck cares?
Yeah, exactly. But they've got it set. They've got it. There's a couple of ways that they can go with it. And again, I think the other reason that for the A's in particular, another reliever makes sense is because of how well they've performed offensively late in games. Just another inning of not letting a team score is another inning where you can get up there and have somebody hit one out of the ballpark in a big spot, and you can come back in a game. If it's 2-0 in the sixth, even if you're down, another inning that you don't let somebody add on, or another inning that you don't let somebody get at your fifth starter or your seventh starter, if you will, that's another opportunity to come back and steal a game. And as we've seen with the A's, sometimes you steal a game and it sets you up for the next game pretty well, too.
Absolutely. And look, a lot has been made of the A's late inning offense. And like you said, we already know how good the eighth and ninth innings are from a bullpen perspective. The longer you stretch out that almost impossible to score on back end of your bullpen, the more value you give to those late inning hits and the late inning home runs that you've been getting. Yep. And that's a thing that this is completely anecdotal on my part, but that feels like a thing you see with a lot of the most exciting playoff teams, is that ability to score runs late and then lock it down. I realize that sounds reasonably obvious, but I do feel like that particular reputation of, well, they're never out of a game, is a thing that you attach to a lot of the best and most exciting playoff teams. That is where the A's are headed quickly. It's time for the 12K per day cash contest. It's your chance to win $1,000. Here's what you got to do. You text the code word underdog to 72881. That's underdog to 72881. This is a multi-state contest. Message and data rates apply. Underdog. You ever watch that show, Underdog?
Not really.
Yeah. All right. It was a fun cartoon. Just me? Anyone back there? I'm the only Underdog fan. Fine. Forget I brought it up.
And again, I'm not against it. I'm not really into it. I'm not against it.
More of a lukewarm situation with Underdog. You're as familiar as a name. You like that one?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where I think the A's are at a great spot, because they could go either way with it. And another reliever with the way they hit at the end of games, that is a good thing. And that, you know what? That's how you beat a Yankees in a one game playoff.
That's true.
That's how you beat them. You figure out a way to get through the first couple innings and it's close. And you know what? You hit a ton of home runs on the road and they hit a ton of home runs, period. If you have a couple of guys that can get you through the end of that ball game, if you get a one run lead, two run lead, that's how you get it done.
Yeah. Certainly that's how the Giants have gotten it done in a wild card game or two. The more I think about this A's team, the more I like their chances heading down the stretch. And look, you can really never have too many good relievers, right? I mean, in playoff baseball now, I got a texter on Underdog. Thank you, 510 texter. I'm not the only person in the world who watched Underdog. The beefier that bullpen can be heading into a one-game playoff, that's, you know, it's always an all-hands-on-deck situation. So I think especially when you look at how difficult the prospect of getting to the division lead is going to be for the A's, it's even more important to improve the bullpen knowing that you've got a one-game playoff in your future.
And you know what? Maybe you go get a righty like Familia, and you go get another lefty to put with Buchter, and then you get another mid-level starter type. Maybe you go get all three.
Well, like we've said, the A's have assets, man, and that's part of why you build an asset-filled farm system. Part of it is so they'll play for you, but part of it is to trade those guys for major league talent that's ready now. That's how baseball works. Tonight, Derek Rodriguez, Edwin Jackson, 6:35, first pitch out in Oakland, and we'll have coverage for you starting at 6 o'clock. In your mind, JD, who's got more pressure on them in this series?
The Giants. Yeah, I mean, the A's are at a point where they could take a 2 out of 3 loss and you know, or maybe they struggle, they lose coming out of the break, let's say 3 out of 5 or something like that. I mean, the Giants need to get it rolling, because the Giants are a a bad weekend away from being in big trouble. Already, you know, I know the difference as far as the wild card and the division. The Giants are four back of the division and four back of the wild card. The A's are three back of the wild card. So I know technically the A's now are a little bit closer. But the Giants get swept, you know, in this series and a couple other teams in front of them. There's so much. That's the thing. When you've got so many teams in between,
somebody, a little slippage hurts a lot.
Somebody's going to win.
Yep.
Like, so somebody's going to win. So if you take a bath and go 1-4, or you know, you come out first 10 games, you go 3-7.
You're falling further behind at least somebody.
Somebody.
Yeah.
To the point where you come out of that, you're 7-8 back. And if you're 7-8 back and you're staring August 1st in the face, you're in big trouble at that point in time. So more pressure definitely on the Giants.
So let me ask you this, though. Because you said if you were the Giants, they're a classic Stan Pat team. That's bulletproof, right? In other words, they couldn't lose enough to make them sellers in your mind.
I mean, they could lose 10 in a row.
But even if they did,
well,
you think they become sellers?
I mean, then the question is, well, what are you selling? McCutchen? Dyson? I mean, I think they could look at that.
I think definitely McCutchen would be a candidate. I think you'd try to find someone to take Longoria off your hands.
Nobody's taking Longoria.
No?
Longoria signed for 4 more years.
I think 3 more after this one.
Yeah,
but it's not an unreasonable number.
It's not.
He's a good defender. He's been an average hitter. Could you convince someone he'd be worthwhile?
Probably not.
Probably not. But I'm saying I'd think about it, and then, you know, would you consider a Brandon Belt trade?
I don't.
I mean, if you become a seller, why wouldn't you consider a Brandon Belt trade?
I would say yes to that if this was a situation where they would have been bad all year. I just don't see them being the team that's going to suddenly become a seller and then do that. Is that like the circumstances matter? Like if they were 10 games under 500 right now, I think we'd be talking about that.
Okay, but let's say they did lose 10 straight and they're 8 games under 500 on the 30th, on the 31st.
You'd have to look at it. Again, I just don't see them shifting course that quickly toward everybody must go.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I agree. If we're talking about what will the Giants do, I agree with you. When's the last time they were sellers? It's been a while. And I mean, even 2011 they were buyers. They were non-playoff years where they were buyers. So I don't see them becoming big sellers. But like I said, you're running out of rope and your farm system's thin. I got to at least consider it. I got to consider a guy like Brandon Belt and what I might be able to get for him. I don't think they will, but I would, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, again, you got to see how it plays out. I mean, I would say probably not. But again, if it was a season-long deal where this team was bad all year, then yeah, I could see where it gets to that point where you're looking at everybody.
Yeah. I just think, you know, if we look at what happened last year, and then you look at this year as if you hadn't gotten sort of magical contributions from guys like Derek Rodriguez and Alan Hansen, you'd probably be just as bad as you were last year.
Meh. See, I don't think you can go that far with it. Right. I think you could say that, but I think anytime you say that, you have to examine the possibility that it goes the other way.
Okay, but I think you could also say,
well, hey, you know, if they don't blow a couple of games,
you're
they're
right.
eight
and
games
if
over
Bumgarner's
500,
healthy,
they're already there.
You can say all that. My point is just, you're trying to be a very good team, right? Last year, they were a very bad team. They came into this year, I think both of us earlier said, we looked at them as a pretty mediocre team coming into the year.
Yeah.
And that's more or less what they've been, thanks to some injuries and some surprising contributions from guys like Pablo and Alan Hansen.
But they've been just a quintessential 500 team.
I know, but Pablo Sandoval being a surprising contributor does nothing for me in the future. Even Alan Hansen being a surprising contributor, unless you really think Alan Hansen is going to be playing second base, which means I don't know what happened to Joe Panik, that doesn't do a lot for me.
No, it doesn't do a lot for you as far as the future goes, but the reality isn't finding a guy like Alan Hansen and keeping him for 5 years. The reality is finding the 2019 Alan Hansen. Finding the 2000, I mean, that's
what you need to do.
Like, that's how you're good. Like, you're not good because you think Alan Hansen's good for 5 years. You're good because you go out every year and you find that guy. And you know, and you find different guys that can help contribute around a winning core. And so I don't, I mean, yeah, Pop, you know, if you said to me, JD, Pablo Sandoval is going to be a pretty good bench player that can start some games for you if people go down to injury for the rest of his career, that I think could happen. Like, that I don't think is, like, I don't think anything Pablo Sandoval's done this year is against anything. To me, he could do that for the next 4 or 5 years. He could be a solid bench player that can start some games. That doesn't surprise me. Now, is he a carrier? Hell no.
And is he a part of your future in a meaningful way? I don't think so.
Well, you need bench players too. I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah, but anybody could do that.
He's a minimum player right now for you. You know, speaking of the Giants, I mean, it's if you're going to be a good team, you're going to need somebody to play that role. So who cares if he's on the team or not?
Yeah. I guess I would. You're right. Who cares? That's kind of my point.
But he helps you. Like, that's the thing. Like, right. Like,
a little bit. A little bit.
But you could. But what I'm saying is, if you don't have those guys, you're terrible. And then we're talking about everybody else. It goes back to what we were talking about before the show. It's,
well, I guess that's my question.
If they don't have Andrew McCutchen putting up average numbers, they stink.
But that's kind of my question, and I'll ask it to Giants fans. Would you rather be mediocre because Andrew McCutchen is average and Pablo Sandoval's contributing, or would you prefer to be terrible and sort of tear this thing down and start over from scratch? 888-957-9570, our phone number, 95795 for the PenskeAutoSales.com text line. Matt Kolsky and John Dickinson in for Damon Bruce on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Candy Maldonado with the hesitation, allowing Jose Canseco to score, and he fails to get Dave Parker at second base, so the Oakland A's take.
I'll tell you what, we're having an error. I don't know if we're on the air or not, and I'm not sure I care at the moment, but we are. Well, folks, that's the greatest open in the history of television, bar none. Yes, it certainly did. We're still here. We are still, as we can tell, on the air, and I guess you are hearing us, even though we have no picture and no return audio, and we will be back, we hope, from San Francisco in just a moment.
Good stuff from Al Michaels. I'm impressed.
Yeah, considering the circumstances, that really was well done.
Yeah, he's a great one. No longer doing baseball. Al Michaels, still cherished as a football broadcaster. Giants and A's coming up tonight. And, of course, that was not the last time they played, but that did happen during a Giants-A's World Series.
Most meaningful time they played.
Definitely the most meaningful time they played. Man, and also hearing Jose Canseco sort of be a key to the game is a pretty funny thing to rewind on.
Yeah. Yeah, no question about
Jose,
it.
Jose, key to the steroid era, as it turns out. Tonight, you get Derek Rodriguez going against Edwin Jackson. How about this, JD? Right now, both teams are almost the same distance out of the playoff race. If I make you handicap it, who has the edge and by how much for actually getting in?
I think the A's are getting in. I think the Giants are not getting in.
Straight up prediction, you're picking the A's to go and the Giants to not.
I think the A's are going to get the second wild card. And they're going to play at Yankee Stadium or Fenway. Right now it would be Yankee Stadium on, I think that would be October 2nd or 3rd, although I believe it's the 2nd, that Tuesday. So I think the A's are going to make it. And I said that last week. I look at the comebacks and the bullpen and the home runs. I think the A's are getting into one of their runs. And this is, you know, in the Billy Bean and now David Forst and Billy Bean era, when the A's get on these, it looks similar to the way 2012 looked.
Right.
It looks similar to the way 2000, 2001, 2002 looked.
And historically, you get 3 years and then you trade everybody away. But the A's are selling you that this time it's different.
When they steal games and hit home runs, and it's like, where did this come from? And like I think sometimes we forget that Billy Beane is trying to put a good team on the field every year. It's not like when people get so agitated at the way the A's do business as far as, you know, trading their players away. But the reality is, when you trade players away, the objective is to get good players back and players that eventually could be a core that leads you to win. And he's been pretty good at that over, you know, and it doesn't work every single year, although I think every year he does, for the most part, try. I think they took more of a step back maybe the last couple of years after they traded this last group mostly away. But the object of this thing is to come up with guys that you can keep for 4, 5, 6 years.
Well, and the answer to the question you asked at the beginning of that, right, the question of, it's like, oh, they're hitting home runs. Where'd these guys come from? Well, the answer is they came from when you traded away those good players from the last time around.
They're good players. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And you trade away good players, you got good prospects, and here they come.
And you want good players back, and you wind up getting good players back. So I think this is the next round of that A's magic, if you will. But it, again, when I say magic, that's not a negative. That's not me saying, oh, well, they're, you know, it's fraudulent in any way. No, they're a good team.
So I want to go down this road with you, though, because as we both said, historically, this is about a 3-year run before guys get traded out of town. Now, if we're to believe Dave Cavill, during the course of this 3-year run, we're hopefully going to have an announcement on a new stadium. Do you believe that? And maybe more to the point, do you believe the story that this time around it is different? This time around, it's not going to be Matt Chapman traded 3 years from now, Matt Olson traded in a couple years, Sean Manaea pitching for the Yankees. This time, those guys stay.
I do think there's going to be a ballpark announcement at some point soon. I do think. Let's say in the next, where are we, middle of 2018, next 18 months, let's say. There's an announcement made of something. It's going to be somewhere. There's some plan. I do think that will happen. Now, will the timeline fit this group of players? Well, it better. It better happen in that time frame that I mentioned. Because I'm not as convinced that the timelines are going to match for this core group of players.
So you think this might be sort of the core before the one that gets to stay
around?
Yeah,
and I realize that the first thing I said doesn't necessarily support the second thing that I said, because the reality is if in 2019, let's say, the A's know that they're going to have a ballpark in 2023, that could be reason enough to make this. But if it lingers a little bit later than that, to the point where, and then it takes 4 years to, so if we're getting into 2020 and then it's going to be 2024, 2025, if it gets to that point, then I think we're starting to get down the road of, all right, it might be the next core group, or some of the pieces that come up in 2 years might be around, but some of the guys that are already up might not be.
Some of the guys.
I don't think it's a lock that this core is the core that stays together. Now, that doesn't mean that this can't be a core that wins you a ring.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean,
they got awful close with previous cores.
And I always think that, you know, the way A's fans should look at it is the Royals example. Because the Royals had their core of guys that came up together.
Yep.
And they had a hell of a run, and a couple of them stayed, and a couple of them, too rich for my blood, I'm out. Hosmer, you can go.
I think they're feeling pretty good about letting Eric Hosmer walk.
Will Myers, we're going to trade you. You know, Arl Gordon, all right, you didn't get what you thought, we'll keep you. You know, like that. Lorenzo Cain, sorry, we're going to let you go. Like those, that's okay. Like if you have a good 5, 6 year run, I say this all the time. You know, I think one of the things that perturbs A's fans is they want to be more like the Giants.
Right.
They want to have these core players that win and are household names, and you keep them forever. Well, part of the beauty of being the A's, because it's not all bad, is that you are never going to sign that guy to a bad contract in theory, because it's just not even something that's considered. Like you're not gonna sign Matt Chapman to the 10-year contract.
The Mike Trout. You're not giving him Mike Trout.
You know what I mean? You're not gonna do that. So and there's a benefit in that, honestly. And I get that, and the benefit is, look, if you have good young players that you develop for 5, 6 years and make a run, and then it becomes another core group for 5, 6 years and you make, that's awesome. That's good. That's good. That's not bad. And I get the difference where fans get frustrated with it is, well, when the 5, 6 years is really, like you say, 2, 3, 4 years.
Yeah.
So I understand that frustration. There is a clarification there that needs to be made.
But I do think, to your point, it probably is not talked about enough how big a gap there is between a team like the Giants or the Dodgers or the Red Sox or the Cubs and a normal Major League Baseball team. And then another gap down to the A's. So I don't think it's realistic in the near future or even the medium future for A's fans or the fans of 80% of Major League Baseball franchises to suddenly expect Giants level spending, a $200 million payroll. That's not something the vast majority of teams can do. Like you said, teams like the Royals are spending in the middle of the pack, right? Now, the Royals, who are by no means a large market team, have a payroll nearly twice the size of the Oakland A's. So you can hope to get up to 100, 120. Giants spending is a different level.
Yeah, and I think the point that I'm trying to make is about keeping your guys.
Right.
More than maybe going out and signing a Cueto.
Well, but also or guys Giants, like that. The Giants may look back and say we kept our guys for too long.
Right. And that's my point. My point is, do you want to sign, you know, Matt Chapman in 2022 after you win a ring for 8 more years? You might not. And my point is, the A's not ever really being in a position where you do that.
Sometimes it's hurt them, other times it's benefited them.
It's like, did you want Jason Giambi from 2002 to 2010?
Someone probably did.
I mean, well, the Yankees did.
Yeah. No, but I mean, A's fans probably thought they did at that time.
But that's kind of the example. Like,
yeah, you
do, because you love Giambi and he was an A and you want all these games. I get that.
Just like the way people wanted to pay Pablo Sandoval $150 million when he left for the Red Sox.
But the reality is,
the
A's are removed from ever having to consider that.
Yes.
And that isn't a bad thing if you make the most of those first 5 years.
Yeah, except the problem is it is a bad thing.
But not if you can keep finding the players.
No, but it is a bad thing because it's an unnecessary handicap. I mean, I hear you.
Okay, that's fair.
You can play the advantages of that. And there's a certain, I guess you could say, like, easing of pressure of making those big money decisions if you just don't have the money to make them. But also, clearly the perfect scenario is having the money and only making the decisions when it's a good decision. So It's an unfortunate handicap that you're dealing with. But again, there's the handicap that the A's are right now, which is a $71 million total payroll, which is unheard of for a team that's not deliberately losing. Like, the next 3-4 teams on that payroll list are deliberately trying to lose.
Right.
The White Sox, the Tampa Bay Rays, those are tanking baseball teams, essentially. There's a difference between being a big spender and being a reasonable Major League Baseball spender. And I think whether it's this group or the next group, we're starting to get closer to a place where the A's can realistically hope to be a normal baseball spender.
And I think if they get the ballpark, then they'll be able to do that. They'll be able to get to that middle of the pack. And again, assuming that the current regime is around, they will be in a position to spend wisely.
Here's an interesting text about the Giants that relates to this conversation and relates to our Giants trade conversation from a 925. Giants should continue to keep mediocre teams instead of blowing it up. Look at the SF teams that won the World Series. None of them were dominant teams. That's an interesting point.
Yeah.
And that's
although
one of the,
all of those teams are significantly better than this team.
Particularly the pitching staffs were significantly better, which obviously is how they won those titles. I think the lineups were similar, actually, for the most part. Veteran players, not a lot of pop, but guys who've gotten big hits in big situations. I mean, you had a healthy Hunter Pence, who's probably better than anyone hitting right now for the Giants in 1 year.
Yeah.
But for the most part, the lineups have not been much better than this.
I actually don't think that's accurate. And you'd have to go through, I mean, 2012 is the one that stands out. I mean, 2012, it's Buster Posey is an MVP. He had a huge second half. You go around the horn with them. I mean, at that point, I mean, Belt's a young player at that point. Crawford's
not hitting that much.
Crawford's a young player at that point. You know, Sandoval's a guy that's in it. You know, he's right in the middle of his tenure. You know, and they had veterans. I mean, the outfield was veteran. You know, basically, they had Pence late.
Buster Posey was phenomenal in 2012. That is certainly true. But Melky Cabrera was their second best player. Hunter Pence
for half the year.
I'm just saying that Hunter Pence was a 219 hitter in a Giants uniform that season. Pablo Sandoval was good, not great. 12 homers, 63 RBIs in 108 games, also missed time. Brandon Crawford hit under 250. Ryan Terrio was your second baseman. That was not a particularly good lineup.
And then Scudero, and he's a veteran.
Uh-huh. Yeah, again, good, but if Longoria and McCutcheon hit a little bit, this lineup's just as good as that one. The difference is the pitching staff. It was Kane and Bumgarner and Lincecum and Vogelsong, and, you know, you don't have that anymore.
Yeah, I just, again, if you watch this team day
in, I guess Lincecum was already bad at that point, but Zito was decent.
He was going bad. 12 was the year he kind of, it turned.
But it was one of Zito's better years, and you had Vogelsong, Bumgarner, and Kane all pitching at an all-star level,
basically.
Yeah,
no, it was definitely pitching, and the bullpen was great,
and
the like. They figured out the closer as well. Those teams were just, those were better. All of those teams, I think sometimes there's this misnomer that, oh, the Giants were just, they just stunk and they were average. Like, Giants put together pretty good teams, and they added players at the right positions. I mean, I just, you know, you can go through numbers, you can sort through them. If you watch this year's team and watch those teams that won, the teams that won were better. Like, it's not.
Yes. No, they were better, but how much better? And more to the point, really what it came down to with those teams is, they had pitching that kept them in every single postseason game, and then they got clutch hits from Buster Posey and Brandon Crawford and a couple hundred pens. That's what it was.
And Scudero. And,
yeah, and veteran players who maybe didn't put up the best numbers in the regular season. So although I think I would lean towards blowing it up if I was in charge, I understand that point from the texter, because it's very possible, and the Giants have done it at least two, if not three times in this decade, it's very possible to win the World Series without ever being the best team in baseball.
Yes, that is possible, for sure.
That doesn't really happen in basketball.
Rarely.
Yeah. Baseball is unique in that way. If you get a good run of pitching, you can win a World Series, period.
You can. I just don't think this team's good enough, you look at. Like, I don't put this team in the ilk of, for, you know, the 2000, and I'll say this, like the 2014 team was the best team in baseball for nearly half the year in the first half.
In the first half.
And then
yes.
They weren't very good. There were a lot of injuries. And then they kind of found it around August in 14. And they wound up sneaking in the playoffs. And Bumgarner was great in the wild card game. Grand Slam Crawford.
Yep.
And then they figure out ways to win from there once you get in. But that, like, this Giants team doesn't have that 42-21. You know, third of the season stretching. They don't.
No,
the 2012 team was great in the second half. I think they were six games over 500 at the All-Star break, and then they were great in the second half. This team doesn't have that kind of run in them. Like this, you know, I think the 2010 team was, I think halfway through the year, they were 41-40.
Is there, like, anything they could do?
They're most like that team, only without the pitch. Like, I think this team is most like the 2010 team. It was kind of a hodgepodge of veterans, and Posey comes up. This team is more like that team, but they don't have near the pitching.
Is there anything this Giants team could do to convince you they could be that kind of contender where they sneak into a wild card, and because they're veterans and they got a couple pitchers, they surprise some people?
Yeah, come out of the break and win 4 out of 5 and 7 out of 10.
But it's just playing
better.
It's not a move. There's
no
move to make.
No, they gotta show me that they can get on a run. They gotta show me that they can go 15-5 out of the gate right now and be 10-5, you know, get right into that conversation where you're about 12-over with Atlanta and Philly and Milwaukee. You gotta get there. Like, you gotta go get to that level, and you know what? Maybe those teams push off, and there's still a gap. But you got to show me that you're good enough. Get hot, because they don't get. You know, they've had some 16-8. I think they've had some little stretch like that. But then
they won
five,
a lot of,
then they lose five in a row.
They won a lot of series in a row, but not. You know, they don't sweep any of them, so it's not as much of a run as you want. It's a lot of that.
A lot of that, and it's a lot of, you look at the Giants. They've lost two home series all year,
all year long.
One to the Diamondbacks, one to the A's.
Yeah.
They lost 2 out of 3 in those. But, you know, how many times have they swept somebody in a series? No, there's been a lot of, you know, rubber matches, and they've won the third game. And it's, so you add it all up, and it's 30-20, which is basically 3-2. times 10. I mean, that's what 30 and 20 is. And then they're terrible on the road because they don't hit and they play shabby defense and it's just they get on the road and it's bad.
And boy, so, it doesn't help that Brandon Belt starts the year or the second half out on the paternity list.
Sure
and
doesn't.
It's funny, we were talking about this when we saw the news. It's just about the most Brandon Belt thing to happen.
Nothing you can do about it. I'm not saying otherwise, but to have like...
This guy seems very snake bit.
It's just... I'm going to leave it at that.
You had 4 days where...
It's nobody's fault.
No. There's nothing to be done. Your wife went into labor. You want to be there? Perfect. Great. I hope you're a wonderful father. And congratulations to the Belt family. But it's just like one thing after another with poor Belt. If it's not a child being born, it's a random appendectomy. It's a errant baseball to the head when you're not even in a game. The stuff that goes down with this guy is remarkable. And at a certain point, it's like it staggers the imagination. At every turn, there's something like this for Brandon Belt. For those of you interested, here are the lineups for tonight. Steven Duggar leads off for the Giants, and it does seem like that outfield is sort of set anew with Duggar in center, Gorky's in left, and Andrew McCutchen in right. But the lineup, Steven Duggar followed by Alan Hansen, McCutchen, Crawford in the four hole, Buster Posey hitting fifth, Pablo Sandoval sixth, Ryder Jones seventh, and playing third base, Nick Hundley, your DH. Someone's going to have to explain that to me. And Gorky batting ninth and in left. For the A's, Marcus Semien leads off, followed by Stephen Piscotty, Jed Lowry, Chris Davis, Matt Olson, Matt Chapman, Mark Canna, Dustin Fowler, and Jonathan Lucroy. Who you got tonight?
I think the A's win tonight.
Edwin Jackson over Derek Rodriguez. I think this is the most intriguing matchup for me. The other ones both look a little bit one-sided. You don't love Cahill's chances against Bumgarner, and I like Manaea's shot against a questionable Johnny Cueto a lot.
Yeah.
But this is an interesting game. And
this is the 50-50 game, if there is one.
Right.
I'd agree with you.
And also, this game, I think, it does a good job of illustrating sort of where we're at with these two teams. You got guys who weren't on the roster at the start of the season on the mound, and yet... Maybe the guys going the best as starters for their two teams right now, and lineups made of patchwork for the Giants and made almost entirely of young guys for the A's. This is who these teams are, and it should be fun.
Yeah, I think the Giants struggle to hit tonight. I think the A's win it. I think the Giants, tomorrow's all eggs in one basket game. Like, you better get it. And if tomorrow's the game that if tomorrow's the game where... It's, you're up 3-1 and somebody hits a three-run homer in the eighth after Bumgarner's out of the game.
And then Trinan shuts you down.
Then you're toast Sunday. Like, so
yeah.
And
frankly, they get swept in this series.
It could get away real quick.
It could be a long downhill path to the end of the season for the Giants if this next week doesn't go well. And it's not an easy week. It is not an easy week. This has been a pretty easy show. Always a pleasure. JD, and of course, we need to thank Alex Pavlovich for joining us earlier in the 4 o'clock hour. Thanks, of course, to the wonderful Gianna Franco, who managed to bring us remarkable content while also producing six other things across the building and running in and out of the studio. I am very impressed. In my attempts to fill in for you, I never left the chair, and it was still a struggle. Thanks to Albie. Thanks to Elena. JD, I'll see you around.
I'll see you tomorrow, because I'm on with the guru right after you are.
Okay.
Tomorrow morning.
Bye now.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.